On today's Bill of the Flatter Show, episode 106, Cockles and Muscles, Dapples and Grays, Seabrook, and Audrey laughed and laughed and laughed. All of this and more. The Flatter Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatter Show. A low-calorie beverage for my diet. Low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. It's delicious. Welcome to the Flatter Show. I'm Kenty, your host, and my co-host Jose is on the bed, taking a nap. Welcome to the Flatter Show again, as I meander my way into the opening here. Hope everybody's doing fine. I'm doing fine. So there's a drought where we live. We haven't had much rain. Last night, though, it rained, so it was nice to have some rain for about a half hour. We probably could use some more rain. But I kind of like the dryness, so I'm thinking maybe I'll move out into the desert. I don't know, though. I kind of like it dry. I kind of like it dry on the drier side. So, I mean, I don't know. What's it like to live in the desert? You probably don't have as much problems with mildew. You know, one of the things in the Bible when I read it, the Bible in 90 days, because I read the Bible in 90 days, actually less than 90 days, is God was very concerned about mildew. In the Levitical laws, right, the Leviticus, there were more laws about mildew than there were about homosexuality. It was very interesting that mildew was a problem even in biblical times. mildew. It ain't kosher. Okay. Let's see here. Let's start with the iTunes review. For those of my listeners who have not gone over to iTunes to make the review, I would urge them to please go to iTunes and write a review for the Flatter Show. I'd appreciate it very much. With more reviews, apparently what happens is as you write reviews, as there are more and more reviews for the show, it goes up the line so more people will look at it, I guess. I mean, it'll be more of a chance people will look at it depending on the reviews, the number of reviews. So I'm asking you, my listener, to write a review for me, your podcaster, one of your favorite podcasters. I'm assuming that, especially if you're a long-time listener. I love you. I love you all. Welcome to the Flatus family. Jose welcomes you, too. Right now, he's dreaming of a biscuit. But he thinks of you quite often, I can tell. So please, iTunes review. Also, my number is 206-986-3617. Call it. Leave me a voice comment. And let me know what you're thinking, because that's important. This is a sort of conversation. Of course, it's an audio blog, but I really get off when you give me a call and send in voice comments. So, you know, I get my – it's really exciting. So there. You can also reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com. If you don't want to use the phone number, you can record yourself and send me an MP3 file. I'll accept that. Or written email. You know, I'll accept that too. Anything, really. But I want to hear from you. And also, I'd like to see your review, the review on iTunes, please. There's a sister podcast to The Flatus Show called Deep Flatus. There are 8 episodes that have gone up. I don't think I have one for this week, but there's 8 of them. And that is basically my vacation to Washington State. So you can hear about the back scenes of my trip to Washington. How did you like the video of my vacation? I haven't heard too much. How'd you like the video I put up of the bottom, which is the, you know, the scene from Valley of the Dolls? Of course, I do the song Valley of the Dolls, which is one of my favorite songs. But I love that movie. I think it's a hoot, and I love that scene. So I tried to recreate it as best I could with my limited means. But I think I did. I like it. I thought it was funny. So I don't know what you guys thought. I'd love to hear feedback. Feedback is always good. You can call me at 206-986-3617. Or email me at flatusshow@gmail.com. That would be good to do. Okay. Now, let's see. I'm going to talk about something. The Vitamin Shop, which is a store that sells vitamins and supplements. I'm bleeding. My leg is bleeding because I'm itching myself. Now, I always get these things on my legs. They're like, I have always have scabs. I constantly have scabs on my legs. And I'm always scratching, and they come off, and I bleed. So I don't know what that is. It's probably some horrible disease. Bleeding leg disease. But anyway, at the Vitamin Shop, where I buy my vitamins and protein powders for working out. Which, let me tell you something about protein powders, is that after I work out on Saturday, it doesn't happen at night, because when I work out during the week, Tuesday or Thursday, I take my protein powder after my workout, and I come home and, you know, rest, relax, and I go to bed, and I'm fine. Saturdays, I do it in the morning. I take the protein powder after I'm done working out, because that's when you need to take the protein powder to help your body to build the muscle, so it doesn't you need to have the energy, you need to have the building blocks to build your muscle at that point. Otherwise, it's defeative. You know, it's like if you work, if you don't have enough calories in your diet, right, when you're exercising, the first thing that goes is the muscle. So it's important that you have enough calories and enough building blocks to maintain your muscle mass. And so that's why you should have a protein drink after exercising. And if you have enough protein and stuff, then, you know, your exercise, then it'll start burning fat and stuff. So you need to have enough calories in your diet before – you need to have enough calories in the right kind of foods to eat, right, before the fat starts going away. So anyway, that's why I have the protein drink. But on Saturdays – man, I get like, you know, in the afternoon I have like diarrhea, you know. It's like the protein shake has just gone right through me. Not that you really want to hear this, but this is an audio blog. And so you're going to hear about these things. And it's really to help you, the listener, you know, I mean, just to give you the information. I'm just telling you, guys. So what I thought is well, probably it's not digesting the protein, because the protein powder I have has really complex proteins in it. It has whey protein, beef protein, and egg protein. Right, and it has like 51 grams of protein. So I'm thinking probably my body is not digesting it. You know, maybe I should drink it slower. I don't know. So what I did is I bought papaya tablets with bromelain, which is comes from pineapple. It's the enzymes from in papaya. It's enzymes in papaya and pineapple, which help break down food in your stomach, meat and stuff like that. So I did that. I took those, and you know what? I didn't have any problems. I was able to, you know, broke down the proteins. I was able to absorb all that before I you know, crapped it out. So not to be crude, but just be accurate and truthful. Because, you know, at the Flatus Show, we're honest and maybe crude, but or at least we're honest. You know, we're not just, you know, cursing for no cursing's sake. Because jumping codfish! That's what I have to start saying. I can't say the F word. So jumping codfish, you take the papaya tablets and you eat those with your food. After you're done eating, you take your papaya tablets. My grandmother used to take papaya tablets. Her doctor had recommended it. But she had I think I told you. She had like one sixth of her stomach left. After this major operation where she nearly died. And that's when Jesus came and healed her. Actually, that was the second time Jesus came and healed her. But the first time she was on her death's door. She was on death's door and this God came to her, she says. And this hand, she felt like this hand went right over her body and she was fine. And she had a private duty nurse. And the private duty nurse had left her for a minute. She thought they really didn't think she was going to make it. And the private duty nurse leaves and comes back, and my grandmother is sitting up in bed saying, "Where's some food? I need to eat." She's like, "What? This can't happen." And so she told the doctor and everything. So I was like, whatever. So from that time on, she had like this private conversation with God. So maybe she was a prophet. You know, my grandmother's a prophetess. I don't know. But anyway, that's a true story. That's what she said. So all I'm doing, Sharita, is reporting what happened and what was said and what was believed, okay? That's all. So anyway, the vitamin shop. Where's this going, right? Where's this going? How could this go anywhere? The vitamin shop has this program, because I bought some vitamins the other day. It's called Vitamin Angels. Now, I don't know if this is a private organization or not, but what I gave a dollar. If you go to the vitamin shop, they'll ask you if you want to pay an extra dollar or $5 to help raise money to give people vitamins, to give kids vitamins. Apparently, vitamin A is needed for people so they don't go blind. Apparently, quite a number of people in poor areas go blind from vitamin A deficiency. It says 500,000 children go blind from vitamin A deficiency each year. 500,000. That's a lot. I wonder how many of those 500,000 end up dying. But anyway, it says here, the power of one. $250 can save a small village of 1,000 children. Okay? So I gave a dollar. I'm not asking you to go this isn't like raising money for Easter seals. But I want you to be aware of this issue that's going on. It's a organization called vitaminangels.org. You can look into it yourself. And if you shop at the vitamin shop, you know, you might want to think about giving that extra dollar to this program. I believe they said like 90% or 99%, a lot of that dollar goes to help these kids. It's not like some organizations which are fiscally irresponsible. But let me say this, I'm not involved with this organization, so I don't know completely. I just heard the guy at the store told me that. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, which I am, it says here, because we're a grassroots organization, Vitamin Angels is remarkably efficient. Our administrative budget is less than 5% of the total donations we receive, which means that your contributions go right where it's needed. That may be a good figure. I don't know. I'd have to look at other organizations to see what their administrative percentages, because I don't know. I don't know if that's a lot or not, okay? Because that's a big thing. You really should look into it. I know that Easter Seals is fiscally responsible. And I'm told, and the only reason why I believe that is because somebody who is involved with it on a higher level, financially involved with it, knows about it, finances and stuff, told me they're fiscally responsible. And I trust this person. That's why I say Easter Seals is fiscally responsible from this person. I trust this person implicitly. I don't know anything about this particular brochure or these vitamin angels or whatever. But they all look like little kids from South America on the cover. Possibly a Tibetan child. 5% is their administrative budget is less than 5%. So check out vitaminangels.org. And now on with the show. Oh, I wanted to tell you one more thing. The other day, I picked up Johnny from he does volunteer work. He works at a gallery, an art gallery. It's not really volunteer work. It is sort of – it's a collective. It's like the gallery is a collective. So he has his artwork there. And he pays $25 a month, and he has to go there once a week and work for 2 hours. So he goes Thursday nights. So this is on Rocky Neck in Gloucester, okay? Real popular art gallery. I mean, art colony, Rocky Neck Art Colony. And so first Thursdays, it's called on Rocky Neck. The first Thursday of each month, there's a special thing that goes on in the neck. All the galleries open up their galleries, make sure they're open. They have like special little things going on. Well, the Bryan Gallery, where John has his art, has people come in. And so they have belly dances one time and whatever, lecture. So this last week they had a flute ensemble called, what was the flute ensemble called? I forget. I don't have the name of the flute ensemble. Shit. Where are they? They're from like, what the hell was it? What are they called? Okay, anyway, it's a flute ensemble. And I came to pick up Johnny because I had gone to the workout, right? And then I went and picked him up. So I got there early. So it's like 8:30. And it closes at 9. So I go in there and I'm listening to the flute ensemble. It's like, and it was really neat because it was 7 players and they had the regular flute and the bass flute and the alto flute. And the bass flute is huge and has such a low tone. It's an octave lower than the regular flute, I think they said. But anyway, I digress. So the flute ensemble is playing some Mozart piece. And I'm sitting there. They finish. I'm like, yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I turn to John because it just came into my mind, okay? I said to John, and now for a perky rendition of the Maple Leaf Rag. And John just smiled at me. So they're fleafing through their music, right? And they're saying, okay, now we're going to play this. And the head woman, the woman who was heading it, right? She's like, okay, this is a really difficult piece. You know, we have 3 parts. Everybody ready? Yeah, we're all ready. So they start playing it. And I'll be damned if it wasn't the Maple Leaf Rag. It was like synchronicity. It was really funny. It was kind of scary. But I just walked in, they're playing Mozart. I didn't expect it. Just something in my mind said, Maple Leaf Rag. And I could just picture them playing the Maple Leaf Rag. And the next thing you know, the next thing right away was Maple Leaf Rag. So that's interesting. So anyhow, on with the show.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone, as she wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and the mussels, alive, alive, oh. She was a fishmonger, but sure 'twas no wonder, for so were her father and mother before. And they each wheeled their barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and the mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. She died of a fever, and no one could save her, and that was the end of sweet Molly Malone. But her ghost wheels her barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Lash. That's Brenda Starr, you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you. Brenda Starr. So Brenda Starr, she has just left Jack in the Ahoy room. Brenda had just discovered that Jack was Ernest, and Ernest was Jack. She smacked him and left the Ahoy room. Jack is in there. At this point, Snowbuns and Puffin are looking for Jack, and they end up going to the Ahoy room, not knowing that Jack is there. Jack overhears that they're at the door, and he hides. And he and Snowbuns and Puffin come into the room. So they're talking, and Snowbuns and Puffin are saying, "We want to remind Jack just who he is as an actor, that he is just an actor, and want to make that, you know, keep him in check." So Brenda's on deck talking with Tina, and she learns that Snowbuns and Puffin are not just Jack's like movie people helping him out, but they're his producers. They're the puppeteers. So we're back in the Ahoy room, and Snowbuns and Puffin admit that they say, you know, too bad we had to kill Jill Sweet. She was such a looker. But she was going to talk to Brenda Starr. Yeah, you know, I had to kill Jill Sweet, and you know what we're going to kill next? We're going to kill Brenda Starr, and tonight we're going to kill her, and we're going to send Snuffman to do it. So Jack is, you know, of course, hiding at this point. He's listening to this. So at this point, we're back on the deck, and Brenda is calling Scotty. That's her newsman in the back at the paper. And she says, "Stay on the line. I have a good story for you." The story being that Snowbuns and Puffin are Jack's, you know, puppeteers. But she also has the presidential speech Jack is going to be giving on the ship. Remember, they're on a ship. So she says, "Hold on to the phone. We're going to listen to this." So Jack begins his speech, and Brenda is looking into the crowd. And she's like, "I wonder what Snowbuns and Puffin are up to." So Jack continues his speech, but it isn't the one that Snowbuns and Puffin had told him to give. Right? He starts describing how politics and acting are the same thing, knowing the right people and having money, and that politics. And in politics, talent is optional and morals are obstacles. So Jack continues to tell the truth about the current political atmosphere. And he's about to tell the truth about his own circumstances when he is shot. A shot rings out. He is down. Jack Grant has been shot. Brenda runs up to the podium. And Jack is still alive. And he's like... Here, Brenda, take this. And it's the cell phone, right? So he gives her the cell phone. So she hides it. So the ambulance comes, takes Jack to the hospital. Well, they're on a ship, right? So they go back to the wharf or whatever, and they fly Jack to the hospital. He's in intensive care, okay? He's still alive. Brenda gets back to the newsroom, and she makes a quip. She goes, "The ugly truth about newsrooms, they're at their best when bad things happen." So Scotty and Brenda play back the messages on the cell phone, okay? And they just can't believe what they heard, that Snowbuns and Puffin has a hit out on Brenda Starr. So at this point, Tina comes in, and she's like, "I want to know what's going on with Jack." So Brenda's like, "They want to kill me. Snowbuns and Puffin want to kill me. Listen to this." So she gives Tina the cell phone. Bad idea. Foreshadowing. And Tina's listening to this, right? So Scotty at this point calls Brenda over and says, "You know, listen, we have to start to get the story soon, or we're not going to make the morning paper." Meanwhile, Tina has run out the door. Brenda discovers this and says, "Oh my God, where's Tina?" So she runs after her. So she asks the doorman, "Where'd she go?" And so she finds out through all these different clues that Tina has gone back to the studio. So Brenda goes to the studio, and she's talking. So she gets in. The guard is there, and the guard is talking to Brenda, saying, "You know, what is happening to Jack Grant? How did he get, you know, shot? Like, I've been hearing so many different stories." And Brenda says, "Never trust the news in the first 24 hours after a catastrophe." So Brenda finally gets in, and she's outside of Tina's office, and Snowbuns and Puffin are in Tina's office, and Tina's lighting up a cigarette. "Well, I have something you want, Snowbuns and Puffin. I realize that you weren't on the high ground and stuff, but I didn't expect you were to be murderers." And she shows them the phone. And I want a cut in. I want a bigger slice of the pie on this deal. I want more power. So Snowbits and Puffin are like, yeah, right. And so they tie her up. And so Tina is looking in on the office. And she thinks to herself, thank God it's not me being tied up. And that's it. What's going to happen? Potassium iodine. I received an email from a neighbor a few weeks ago and found out from her that the town where I live is handing out potassium iodine in the case of a radiological emergency, I think they call them. A radiation emergency, which basically means that if Seabrook, the nuclear power plant, were to blow up. Seabrook, let's go to Seabrook real quick. That was the last nuclear power plant to be constructed in the USA. Nuclear, 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 nuclear. I'm always afraid that I'm not pronouncing it correctly because I know that it's generally mispronounced, but I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Nuclear, nuclear, nuclear power plant. So anyway, Seabrook is probably less than 10 miles as the crow flies from Rockport in Cape Ann, I should say. But there are parts, there's a place in Rockport over at Halibut Point where you can see the Seabrook power plant very clearly, especially on a clear day, especially. But you can see it. And it's an interesting place to be because you can also see, four different places. Like, you can see Nova Scotia, you can see Maine, you can see New Hampshire, and of course Massachusetts, because you're in Massachusetts. I mean, just look down at your feet and you're in Massachusetts. But you can see all of these different places. It has to be a very clear day, but you can see them, and especially if you have a binoculars or telescope. Pardon me. Let me get some tea here. The tea I'm drinking actually is unintentional sweet tea. I put a teaspoon of sugar in it, and I poured the tea and everything. I'm letting it steep, and I go back, and I'm thinking, did I put sugar in it? I'm like, no, I didn't. I put the sugar in it, and as soon as the sugar fell off the spoon into the sugar to the tea, I'm like, fuck, I've already put sugar in it. So it is sweet tea. Very sweet. But I'm not going to get rid of it because I'm cheap bastard. I don't want to waste the tea bag. So yes, potassium iodine has been distributed to all of the residents of Rockport and Cape Ann, residents of Cape Ann, and also to the residences in Massachusetts. They've been distributed to Cape Ann and to Cape Cod and the islands. I believe the reason why the Cape Cod and the islands were being distributed for that is because they have a nuclear power plant down there. I think it's called Pilgrim. But we have the Seabrook to contend with. We're in the zone, as they say. which I'm not really sure what that zone is, like, you know. But anyway, apparently, so what you do is in case the... I asked. I went there. I filled it out. Got my potassium iodine tablets for me and John. You get two per person. When the emergency happens, that's when you take your first pill. You're directed by the government. Take your pill. I'm thinking maybe it's potassium cyanide, you know, and they just want to kill everybody because it would be too horrible to survive. But I don't think that's conspiracy thinking. So you take the potassium iodine at the first sight of trouble, right? You're supposed to take it right before it happens or like within, I don't know, some there's a time frame, there's a window. And then you take the other one 24 hours later. Hopefully you're escaping by that point. What it does is this, is that your thyroid is a magnet for iodine. And when there is a nuclear reactor problem, when there's a, I guess, I don't know if this is the same thing for nuclear bombs, but nuclear reactors, if there's a problem with a nuclear reactor blowing up, it would release radioactive iodine into the air. Lots of it. And this was discovered during, I think, Chernobyl. And this is why we learned to take iodine beforehand. What happens is that your thyroid, if you don't have, when you take the iodine, right, you take that iodine tablet, it saturates that thyroid with as much iodine as it can possibly absorb. Okay? And so if you breathe in any of this radioactive iodine, it's not going to stay in your body, you know, to your thyroid. Your thyroid's not going to suck it in. If you didn't have that extra iodine in your thyroid, the radioactive iodine would accumulate in your thyroid and, you know, cause, you know, problems. you know, cancer and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't protect you, your other parts of your body, you know. So, I mean, there's still that to contend with, but the thyroid is known, you know, you can reduce your problems. What else? Oh, John's back. He just went out to the store to get some things. Interestingly enough, I said, well, how do you find out if something has happened? You know, I mean, you're not going to have the news on or whatever at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? And what I found out is something very interesting. It's called reverse 911. And everybody in these areas, if there were to be a horrible, something horrible happens, let's say Seabrook blows up, or maybe a nuclear power plant near you. But anyway, it blows up, or a terrorist comes and blows it up, and, you know, what happens is that there's this thing called reverse 911 in your town where all of the phones ring in your town and you pick it up and it tells you what has happened and you take your pill or whatever. So that's interesting, right? I didn't know that. There's a reverse 911. I have to pause here for a second. Okay, I'm back. Helping John in. Okay, so we have this last nuclear power plant. There is a program in place. They give us some iodine tablets to take in case of an emergency. It just brings us all to very close in your face that we're so close to this kind of problem. Which brings me to a couple things I was looking up, doing some research. And one is, nuclear power plants, they all are from like the 70s, okay? I'm not sure if any were built in the 60s, but certainly that's the 70s is when this all came to fruition, okay? And you have Pennsylvania. Let's see, here we have the Northeast, the NRC region, Region 1, Northeast. Connecticut has Millstone. Maryland has Calvert Cliffs. Massachusetts, Pilgrim, New Hampshire, Seabrook, New Jersey has Hope Creek, Oyster Creek, and Salem. New York has Fitzpatrick, Indian Point, Nine Mile Point, and something, I don't know, RF Jena. Pennsylvania has Beaver Valley, Limerick, Peach Bottom, Susquehanna, and Three Mile Island. Vermont has Vermont Yankee. Pennsylvania has the most. And of course, we know what happened at Three Mile Island. I've seen Limerick, which is very imposing because you're in the middle of the country. When I was in high school, my friend Sean and I, we drove out there. And I don't know how long, it's maybe 2 hours, hour to 2 hours from Philadelphia. And you're in the middle of the country. I mean, you're driving along. There's no lights on the road. There's fields. It was night. You know, you can see the full moon. You see every star. And you're driving. You come around this bend. And then right there is the cooling tower. Huge as anything. And it looked eerie. It was very eerie. And it was like we were right there. I mean, they must have some sort of security now, but it was like right in front of us. It was like, you know, this is 20 years ago. So I also know in the 70s is that there was a, you know, all things about fuel getting off the oil, you know, because we had the oil problems, the oil, OPEC and everything. Call me at 206-986-3617 and let me know what you're thinking. And there was a rise of building like solar energy. And I know people who, when they moved out, people, I had friends who moved, their parents moved out, and they were wanting to get off the grid, so to speak, get off of oil. They built solar into their house and were, you know, had a well and stuff and were able to, you know, generate some energy. Okay, that's back in the 70s. That's 79 or so. On hindsight, okay, and I know things don't work perfectly and nothing is, no one's ever going to agree, but just thinking about all the problems we have with this, the terrorists and oil, right, and all this other terrorism, I should say, and oil, okay, we have a problem with oil, we have a problem with global warming. And people were talking, environmentalists were talking about this in the 70s, I mean, about, you know, going to solar power, you know, wind energy. These are things that are sustainable, right? There's always going to be a sun shining, let's hope. I mean, if there's no sun shining, we're not going to have any life. It seems very not good public planning that we didn't go into solar planning. Like, I'm thinking about architecture, and I think of Ayn Rand, okay? Why wasn't there, like, this? You have to have planning for new houses, right? Why wasn't it put into place that new houses had, let's say, solar roofs, you know? It would have been, how many houses were built between 1976 and 2007? You know, you could have done a lot of good, saved a lot of energy, had these things been in place. Of course, I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, fanciful thinking because I really don't know all the particulars. But it just seems like something that could have happened because I know there were such things. You know, it did exist. Maybe it was too expensive. I don't know. Just imagine. I have to add this. Just imagine a world where you could put the energy companies out of business. I mean, you know, capitalism, you know, the right to earn money or whatever, right? That doesn't mean you have to have that business. Do you really need cigarette companies? You know, just because we have a capitalistic society doesn't mean that we should allow all sorts of companies to exist. You know, they're detrimental. Let's say that science is and technology is developed where we don't need energy companies, that each house in each area is self-sustainable through solar or wind power. Well, I think that'd be pretty good, right? And and you'd say, well, all these people would be out of business. Well, you know, it happens. Look at the you know, everything else is going, all the other wage people are going out of business. What it's going to affect is big fat CEOs and these white collar assholes, you know, and these energy companies. You know, fuck them. We should get solar energy and wind energy and put them out of business. It's just not right. It's not good for America. It's not part of the American it's not part of our American personality. You know, we want to be self-reliant. We don't want to be entwined. I know we talk about the world economy and everything, but I think we ought to tease ourselves away from that. Everybody ought to. And you know what? If India or China can't do it themselves, fuck them. You know, we did it ourselves, basically, right? If they don't have the gumption to do it, fuck them. Let them live in whatever way they want. That doesn't mean I don't like Indians or Chinese or whatever. All I'm saying is that why the hell do we have to help everybody else in the world? Let's just do it ourselves, you know? And I'm not saying that we should, you know, keep people from coming into our country, because that's wrong. You know, I mean, if people want to come into our country, they should. I mean, they can, you know, as long as they're, you know, going to work or whatever. I don't know. But I guess I'm making a simple case here for self-reliance. I don't know. Anyway, that's my thought. But if there had been some sort of mandate to get this, you know, to have this done, then the price would have come down. You know, because if more people would use it, be a greater demand. Well, actually, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking out my ass because I don't know how it was, how difficult or how expensive it was to produce them, because that's really what drives it, you know. But I don't know. I don't know. To me, it seems like if people had put money into developing this stuff earlier on, we would have, and then implementing it, we would be have a lot less problems with dealing with the rest of the world, dealing with the oil and stuff. I don't know what I'm thinking. You see, I'm speaking out of the sense of being an independent American, the pioneer who doesn't want to be part of the world government, who doesn't want to be part of the worldly. Economics and stuff. I want self-reliance. I don't want to have to rely on China to build my stuff. I want to build my stuff. You know, people think of Americans as two different. People always associate Americans with capitalism, which it is a big part. But the fact that, you know, you have this economic conditions, right? Or I don't know how to describe this. That, like, it's a good thing that we go to China to have our cheap products made. Well, you know what has happened is we get toys filled with lead, which would be good in case of a nuclear attack, because you just pile up your toys in your basement, and then you can protect yourself from the effects of the radiation with the lead paint. But, you know, I guess I'm more of a do-it-yourself sort of guy. I mean, my podcast is do-it-yourself. I don't rely on networks and stuff like that. That doesn't mean I wouldn't want to be part of a network. It's just that I also think to myself, it's like, do I want to be part of a network? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, I certainly want to have you know, listeners and get new listeners and get and grow, right, and have ideas. And maybe in the future make some money off of this, okay? I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, say no, right? If I can make some money off of it, you know, that's fine. I would like to, but if I, at the same time, right, if I made money off of it, I wouldn't want to have it affect my content, you know? So, I don't know how that works, and so I'm not really, you know, I'm just saying, if I could, I would. But I also, at the same time, I don't want it to affect my content. So that is off limits. Because this is really about talking about, you know, this is an audio blog, right? And to the point of being truthful about basically how I feel, how I see things. And I'll be, you know, it is my view, and it's not the truth, but it's my view, and so I hope to start a conversation, maybe learn more about different things and stuff like that. So, but anyway, yeah, iodine tablets.
Oh, little Audrey says, save for rainy days, she says, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs, A to Z, and knows the good they bring. Another thing, oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay, though she's not immense, there's a lot.
Little Audrey and her papa were out riding one day in their new streamlined car. Papa was proud of the car, and he was giving it the gas. He wanted to see how much it would make. All of a sudden, the road turned, but Papa did not. He went straight on and into the lake. Little Audrey saw what was going to happen, and she just laughed and laughed. She knew all the time that their car had floating power.
This is Tim.
And this is Nanette.
From For Whatever Reason, and you're listening to The Flatus Show with Kenty.
And Jose.
Hush-a-bye, don't you cry. Go to sleepy little baby. When you wake, you shall have all the pretty little horses. Blacks and bays, dapples and grays, coach and six a little horses. Hush-a-bye, don't you cry. Go to sleepy little baby.
Pavarotti is dead! I know, all these opera stars singing. There's Beverly Sills and Regine Crespin. I never did do the full episode of that. And I was going to have a ukulele song for Pavarotti, but I'll have to wait because it's in D-flat, and it's difficult to get the chords for that. I mean, it fucks up my mind looking at all those flat notes. Whatever. I'm just used to E-flat and, you know, so keys with fewer flats and sharps. I can go up to A flat. That's four flats. That's fine. And two sharps. I those ones I can do fairly easily. And when you get to seven or eight flats, I mean, you know, one note looks the same as the other. So anyway, Pavarotti is indeed dead. He died of pancreatic cancer this past week, and he's had his funeral on Saturday, which was yesterday. And one thing about Pavarotti is I knew about Pavarotti when I was growing up. I mean, we used to listen to the Pavarotti Christmas special on PBS. I mean, and I think we had a Pavarotti Christmas album too. See, my father, he loved Mario Lanza. And so I think he had a Pavarotti O Solo Mio album, one of those things. Maybe it wasn't, because this is in the early 70s. Whatever he recorded in the early 70s, this would have happened before 10. There was Pavarotti must have been on television in the early 70s. And he must have been pretty well known at that point. Because, I mean, I've known about Pavarotti all my life. You know, Joan Sutherland was a very big star. I really didn't have any consciousness of Joan Sutherland until about 1978 or 9, maybe earlier, 77 or 78 or 79. Not as a singer, but as a name, because Robin Williams, in his album Oh Reality, What a Concept, talks about Joan Sutherland singing Rod Stewart. And I thought that was funny, you know. And I really didn't know much about, you know, Joan Sutherland. Beverly Sills, I knew of her name, but I really didn't know too much about her, you know. And Marilyn Horne, I knew her name. But I mean, we're talking about poor Pavarotti. Poor Pavarotti. Let's remember Pavarotti, okay? Yeah, he was good, wasn't he? Anyway. King of the High Seas. He was reported to have... There was an opera that... Le Fils du Regiment in the early 70s. 72, I think. I wonder if I have a recording of Le Fils du Regiment. I might have a... let me pause here, because I think I might have a recording of that. Oh, I'm back. Here, I made another pause. I really thought I'd had a reel-to-reel tape of a 1972 performance of Le Fils du Regiment with Joan Sutherland and Pavarotti from the Metropolitan Opera radio broadcast. But I don't. I did find a Richard Tucker tribute. The Richard Tucker tribute after he died, but I didn't find the Pavarotti. So, yeah, Pavarotti, he was a showman. He was fat. He's a very fat man. He weighed, I think, upwards to, like, at one point, 350 pounds. He had troubles walking on stage and doing stuff. Apparently, I heard this on an NPR program, Tom Ashbrook's. They did a tribute to Pavarotti, remembering Pavarotti. He used to stand on stage and didn't really move too much. And towards the end of the time, when the last days that he was on stage, before he retired, they would have dancing girls help him move around. And apparently his voice was shot. You know, he just didn't really sing. He half sung, which is a shame. He should have probably retired earlier. But he is a good-natured guy. And he has a 4-year-old daughter. I mean, he married a woman. I don't know who her name is. I think his secretary. And his daughter is 4. I mean, now. So it's like 4 years ago. So pretty good, right? Pretty good for Pavarotti. Can't imagine. But, you know, you can think about that if you want. Okay. So, everybody's been playing Nessun Dorma and I don't know what other crap he's known for. Oh, Solo Mio. So I'm going to buck the trend and play the last part of Lucia de Lammermoor. It's Edgardo, I think, is the character's name. It's Lucia's. You listen to the Lucia, Insane Clan Posse, it's called. So that's my episode where I play Lucia de Lammermoor. From an old recording from the 30s, which is public domain, I believe, in Italy. Might not be here, but anyway, it's only parts. And who the hell wants to hear it anyway? I mean, it sounds okay, but Insane Clan Posse, yeah, I forget what number it is. But anyway, Edgardo has his final aria called Fra Poco A Me Ricovero, Soon an Uncared For Tomb. And he, I think he dies. So, it's how sad he is that Lucia has lost her mind and is dead. So, I'm trying to find here it is. Here's a little note about Pavarotti. Oh, this is from 1976. It's from Verona. It has the sopranos, Christina Doidekom. But you're not going to hear her. 1963. Luciano Pavarotti, born Modena in 1935, also had his first international success as Edgardo in Lucia de Lammermoor and Rodolfo in La Boheme, among others, in London, where he stood in for an indisposed Giuseppe Di Stefano. 2 years earlier, he had made his debut as Rodolfo in Reggio Emilia after winning the city's international song contest in 1960. Yeah, what was I going to say about that? Born in Modena, 1935. He and Mirella Franey were from Modena. And I had heard years ago when I was working at the music store, and this is the first music store I worked at, the classical music store Bravo, which is no longer in Pennsylvania, Willow Grove Mall, Pennsylvania. For those peeps out there who know about the Willow Grove Mall in Pennsylvania, it's in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, north of Philadelphia. If you were there between 87 and 92, I was there, so you can talk about Bravo, the record store. That was like one of the best classical record stores, and next to Tower, actually. We had such a great selection of music. I can't believe it was so great. It was like paradise to work for them, for work for that. I miss those days when all the different labels were separated. I mean, London and Deutsche Grammophon and Philips and all these, you know, they were all separate. They were Polygram imported them. And then they all sort of became one label, you know, and it's crap. I miss the days of the separation. Separate and equal, I say. Not separate and unequal. No, I mean, you know, company-wise, not people. Okay. Don't misquote me, Sherita. So anyway, let's get back to Pavarotti. Him and Mella Ferrini were born in the same town. I had heard that they had the same wet nurse. So Pavarotti's on one tit, Marla Franny's on the other tit. I'm telling you, that tit did wonders for vocal cords because they're both wonderful opera singers. So I wonder what that wet nurse was eating. So anyway, without further ado, here is Pavarotti in that aria I just said, whatever it is. I don't have it in front of me because I really can't remember Italian. I'm not really, don't speak Italian, so. Anyway, here it is.
Takes place in Green's Gap, a small town in the Southern Cavern District. Green's Gap Hospital, Dr. Melville speaking.
Doctor, there's been an accident out at Echo Cavern.
Accident? What kind of accident?
Two men was exploring, and they got lost last night. One's unconscious. You better come quick before he's dead.
Doctor,
Jeff, you know how to get out to Echo Cavern, Lem.
Well, Doc, being town constable and ambulance driver, I reckon I know about all there is to know about this country.
Ever been in the cavern, Lem?
Once, Doc Melville, when I was a boy. Nearly got my hide tanned off of my paw. Echo Cavern's a mighty treacherous place.
You mean it's easy to get lost in?
Yeah, not only that, Doc. It's that cavern gas, carbon something.
Carbon dioxide?
Yes, that's it. All of a sudden, you run into some of that stuff, and before you know it, bing, you're out.
Still, people seem to go exploring there.
More fools you be. I wouldn't go into them caverns, leastwise not without a dog.
A dog? What for?
Well, if a dog keels over, then you know the gas is collecting.
I'm afraid, Mr. Gatty, your friend is dead.
Yeah, poor Patsy. It was from the gas, wasn't it, Doc?
That's what it looks like to me.
Why did you go in that cavern, anyway?
Well, Patsy asked me to. He never seen a cave before.
How far did you go in?
Well, it didn't seem very far, but all of a sudden we lost our way.
Where was that?
Well, how do I know whereabouts it was if we was lost? We tried to trace our way back, but it wasn't no use. And Patsy started to get scared. You know, it's kind of funny to see a big guy like that get scared.
Yes, he is rather big, isn't he?
Yeah, 6'4". The mob used to call us Mutton Jeff.
And then what happened?
Well, I was a little scared myself. But we stuck together, you know, walking in the dark with only my flash from the car. And all of a sudden, Patsy keeled over.
From the gas?
Yeah, that's what I figured. His head hit on a rock, and I guess that just about finished him off.
Yeah, I suppose you reckon yourself pretty lucky, mister.
Yeah, sure. I figure it was only because I'm 5'3" that I got out of there alive. And the gas must have been just about a foot over my head.
Yeah? And what do you think of that, Jock Melville?
I think you'd better arrest Mr. Gatty for the murder of his friend Patsy. What was the flaw in Gatty's story? Do you know it? In a moment, we'll hear from Lem and Dr. Melville. But first... See whether you're as observant as Lem and the doctor.
Hey, copper, let me put my hands down. They're tired.
When you're in Green's Gap jail, not before.
I don't get it. It was a good story. I still can't figure how you found out.
Lem tells me they used to take dogs in the cavern because the gas is heavier than air. It collects on the floor. If you really met gas, you would have keeled over first before your pal Patsy.
Well, what do you know? I tell you, nowadays in this murder racket, you need a college education.
Thus in Nineveh, from Ezra Pound's collection of poems Personae from 1909. I am a poet, and upon my tomb shall maidens scatter rose leaves and men myrtles ere the night slays day with her dark sword. Lo, this thing is not mine, nor thine to hinder, for the custom is full old, and here in Nineveh have I beheld many a singer pass and take his place in those dim halls where no man troubleth his sleep or song. And many a one hath sung his songs more craftily, more subtle-souled than I. And many a one now doth surpass my wave-worn beauty with his wind of flowers. Yet am I poet, and upon my tomb shall all men scatter rose leaves ere the night slay light with her blue sword. It is not Rama that my song rings highest, or more sweet in tone than any other, but that I am here a poet that doth drink of life as lesser men drink wine. The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.